From the studios of Wavefront Audiovisual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 104 of Little Brother for the 8th of October 2022. Stay tuned, Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants and not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com or you can post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. So let's get started. On Friday, President Joe Biden signed an executive order to regulate transatlantic data transfers. The order establishes commitments to limit signals intelligence gathering in the EU to protect whatever intelligence is collected and provides the means for European citizens whose data have been collected in violation of the framework some means of recourse. A prior agreement, similar to the one backed by this executive order from 2015, was shot down by the European Court of Justice in a case brought by Austrian privacy advocate Max Schrems on the grounds that it didn't provide adequate protection from data gathering. Back in episodes 79 and 80, I talked about Flock Safety, a company that makes automatic license plate readers and makes them available not just to government but also to organizations such as neighborhood associations to purchase. The systems collect and centralize the data collected by their cameras, making it possible to track movements of vehicles over wide areas. The scrutiny on the organization has increased recently, however, out of concerns that the technology will be used to track the movements of women seeking reproductive services that may have been made illegal in their state. Flock Security is based in Atlanta, Georgia, a point that will become relevant in the context of the next story. In related news, Governor Gavin Newsom of California has signed a law prohibiting California-based organizations from handing over data concerning abortion seekers to authorities from other states. This law covers geolocation data, search histories, and other personal information. As a large number of major tech companies, including Apple and Google, are based in California, this will significantly restrict the amount of data available for such authorities to use in their pursuit. A group of hacktivists have appeared in Russia that are an arm of the National Republican Army, or NRA. The NRA are an organization within Russia who seek to end the Putin administration. The hacktivists have been attacking Russia from within, utilizing the tools typically used for extortion, instead to advance a political agenda. This isn't the first case I've reported on of such a politically motivated attack, though they still remain in the minority. The U.S. Department of Justice, or DOJ, have brought charges against the executives of dozens of companies and organizations that have been selling counterfeit Cisco networking equipment. The equipment in question is often genuinely Cisco, but older, lower-capability models which have been stripped and repainted to appear to be newer, high-capability models. The counterfeiting work was largely done by fraudsters in China and Hong Kong. The amount of counterfeit equipment, were it genuine, is estimated to have a value of approximately $1 billion with a B. The European Union have passed a law mandating that all portable electronic devices with permanent rechargeable batteries use the USB Type-C connector starting in 2024. For a large part, the electronics industry has been converging in this direction for some time now anyway. However, some particular vendors, such as Apple, have held out using proprietary connectors, such as the Lightning connector found on most iPhones. The new regulation will also apply to laptop computers, cameras, and many other devices, not just phones. As the USB-C connector is capable of supplying multiple voltages and multiple current levels, it's up to a maximum of 100 watts, making it suitable for most such purposes. Finally, I have on many occasions extolled the virtues of Signal Private Messenger. The claim is that messages are encrypted from end to end and stored in encrypted form, preventing the content of any communication from being captured. Kaspersky Labs have just published a blog post in which some signal security layers are compromised, and yes, despite this, the attackers were completely unable to get hold of the message traffic. In a nutshell, a compromise on Signal's servers did not produce the keys necessary to decrypt the messages or the contact lists of its users, rendering the attack completely ineffective. This worked because the encryption keys are only stored on the end user's devices, and nobody, not even Signal themselves, has access to the content. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. Well, here we are again. It's time for another round of Who Got Pwned This Week. We have two this week. First up, we have the Los Angeles Unified School District. The LAUSD were hit by a ransomware attack from a gang called Vice Society. This appears to have been a garden variety ransomware attack involving data being exfiltrated, data on systems at the organization being encrypted, and the attackers offering to send them the crypto key in exchange for a ransom payment. The school district declined to pay the ransom, and as is the normal next step in such attacks, the Vice Society began releasing the personally identifiable information of students that they had collected early in the attack. The school district has established a support hotline to provide assistance for anyone in the community served by the school district who have questions or need support. They do not state whether the support is technical, legal, or emotional. The other pwn this week is amateur hour on the part of the pwner. Apparently, two customers of TD Bank in Vermont were compromised by a rogue employee within the organization who accessed customer data without appropriate authorization. The customers were reimbursed for the effects of the access, and the employee was terminated. This is pretty much the way it's supposed to work in such cases. I am certain that I am not alone in feeling this way. I hate captive portals. For those of you not familiar with the term, a captive portal is a step that you sometimes have to go through to connect a device to a public Wi-Fi network. The network itself will, in most cases, present itself as an open network, and at the link layer it is. There's no encryption between you and the access point, so yes, it's technically open at that stage. But once you connect to the network, you then have to log in with credentials of some sort, or at the very least, click an acknowledge button to accept the terms of use. The last type of these, the ones that require you to just click a button, they're annoying. But I'll let them be for the moment because I really want to talk about the other kind, the ones that require you to enter a username and a password of some sort. In many places, in order to get onto the public Wi-Fi, you have to enter credentials. I've had two workplaces where employees were expected to log in using their company username and password. I've seen that in the public Wi-Fi at a local mall, and I've also seen it at a certain nationwide chain of coffee shops notorious for their sizes being tall, grande, and venti. That, to get into the public Wi-Fi, you need to log in using credentials from something like Google, Apple, Facebook, or similar. I'm about to tell you how this is not only invasive, but really fucking dangerous. So, at last night's Albany 2600 meeting, I saw an interesting demo. One of the other members had with him a small circuit board. It was about 25 by 50 millimeters, I'd estimate. That's 2 by 1 inches for the metric impaired. It had a USB connector on it for power, and that's about it. The person with this device plugged it into a battery pack, then connected his phone to the device over Wi-Fi, and opened up a terminal session to it. He then invited us to connect to a Wi-Fi AP that was implemented on the device. When you connect to this AP, you are presented with a splash page that welcomes you to the community free Wi-Fi. You are then invited to select between Google, Facebook, Microsoft, and Twitter for how you would like to log in. You pick one, and you're presented with a place to put your username and password. When you click the login button, it then tells you, "Oops, there was a problem connecting with your login. Please try a different method." Clicking OK brings you back to the start. In the meantime, any username and password you put in there went straight to the owner's phone and you are pwned. And if you go and you try it with another service, you are double pwned. Now, the hardware implementation of this being done on such a small device, that's not the part that's particularly interesting here. This is something that could be very easily done on any kind of small portable device or even a standing device. Such as a Raspberry Pi, a laptop computer, or possibly even a repurposed Android phone. For that matter, you could also build it into a car and do all kinds of damage with this. The appearance of the login page isn't important. This is just window dressing, and it would take little to no effort to capture the appearance of an existing captive portal where people are expecting to need to log in and to mimic it perfectly on a device like this. Having done that, you just set your device up and give it the same or similar network name to the real network that might be expected in whatever place you're in. People seeing the failure message won't really think much of it. Things break all the time. They'll ignore it and move on. Meanwhile, an attacker has captured credentials to all manner of possible things. So what's the OPSEC tip out of this? Two things. First, if you run a public Wi-Fi network with a captive portal on it, please stop. You are actively putting your users at greater risk than if you just let them in. Second, if you use public Wi-Fi, don't even bother using one that requires you to log into it unless you have exhausted all of the other possibilities of getting connected to something first. I cannot tell you how much I would love to see this madness end. As usual, we'll end the week's show with the fail of the week. I mentioned in the Pwn of the Week how things are supposed to go when you have a rogue employee. For an example of how not to do it, we need only look to Hawaii, where an event at an unnamed financial company took place. While we do not know the name of the organization, we do know that the accused is named Casey Yumetsu. Yumetsu had been employed as a system administrator. When Yumetsu was shown the door, the company where he was formerly employed neglected to disable his credentials. This enabled him to continue to log into the computer systems of his now former employer, where, as far as the computers were concerned, he still had all of the rights that he'd had as an employee. Now, anyone who has worked as a system administrator can tell you that these roles come with the keys to the kingdom. A system administrator gone rogue can carry out damage more widespread, faster, and thoroughly than any potential outside attacker, largely due to knowing their way around the company and its systems. Add employee or ex-employee disgruntlement into the mix, and you have a very toxic mixture, and so it was in this case. The reason this is a fail, of course, is that the very first thing you do when firing or laying off employees in such a role is you pull them into a meeting with HR. While they are in that meeting, IT works to disable their access to everything so that before the meeting is over, their ability to cause such havoc has been removed. Apparently, this unnamed financial company in Hawaii didn't get the memo that that's how you do it. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fongaboo and the crowd at Helix for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 group. Special thanks to Chris S., Julie Bernstein, Azriel, Knight Rider 007, Kathy C., and Thriller at Play for story leads. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our Who Got Pwnt music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. Our Fail of the Week music is Space Reggae by Zap. Our opening theme and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker. And our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have questions or comments about this podcast or just want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com or drop a comment on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next week when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Stay safe and be well. Was shot down by the European Court of Justice in a case brought by Australian... I knew I was gonna do that. Was shot down by the European Court of Justice in a case brought by Damn it, I keep trying to say Australian. Start that whole paragraph over.